Now, the conditioned dharmas are divided into four great groups. And it is here that the Abhidharma departs from the sutra tradition. That is to say, the tradition of the unsystematized Buddhism. In the sutras, in the Buddha's original discourses, or what, so far as we can make out, are the Buddha's original discourses, the Buddha divides conditioned existence into the famous five skandhas. If you've even a nodding acquaintance with Buddhism, you will have come across the five skandhas, the five heaps, or the five aggregates, as they're sometimes called. These are said in the sutras to make up, to comprise, the whole of condition, the whole of phenomenal existence. Whatever exists phenomenally can be reduced to one or another of the five skandhas, heaps, or aggregates. So what are these five skandhas? Rupa, or material form, Vedana, or feeling, Sanya, or perception, Sanskara, or acts of volition, and Vijnana, or consciousness. In the sutra teaching, the unsystematized teaching, the whole of phenomenal existence, especially the empirical personality or individuality, is reduced to just these five, these five heaps, these five aggregates. But the Abhidharma adopts a quite different classification. And it's important to understand this for those who want to study the Abhidharma. The Abhidharma divides conditioned existence, or the conditioned dharmas, into four great groups. First of all, and here there's an agreement with the five skandha classification, first of all comes rupa, or material form. Secondly comes citta, which means mind, or mental states. Thirdly comes chaitasika, which means functions associated with mind, or with consciousness. Fourthly comes citta viprayukta sanskaras, or elements dissociated from mind. This is the fourfold classification of the Abhidharma, so far as the conditioned dharmas are concerned. For the benefit of those who are taking notes, I'll just go through it again, because it is very important indeed. The whole of the Abhidharma turns, in a sense, upon this fourfold classification or grouping. First of all, rupa, or material form. Secondly, citta, mind or mental states. Thirdly, chaitasika, or functions associated with mind or consciousness. And fourthly, the citta, viprayukta sanskaras, or elements dissociated from mind, existing independently of mind. Now, this classification, as you can probably already see, is much more systematic than the sutra classification into the five skandhas. Now, each of these four groups, that is, the rupa, citta, chaitasika, and citta, viprayukta sanskaras, each of these four groups is subdivided. Again, the Sarvastivadins reckon as follows. The Sarvastivadins include, under material form, or under the group of material form, 15 dharmas, or ultimate elements. Under the second heading, that is to say, under mind or citta, they include only one dharma, mind itself. Under the third heading, that is to say, functions associated with mind or consciousness, they include 47 dharmas. And under the heading of dharmas, or ultimate elements not associated with mind, they include 14 elements, or 14 dharmas. This is the Sarvastivadin breakdown. Now, the Theravadins, incidentally, do not recognize the fourth subdivision. They recognize only three subdivisions and not four. They divide the conditioned dharmas, that is to say, into only three great groups, not into four, as the Sarvastivadins do. But unlike the Sarvastivadins, the Theravadins divide the second group, the group of citta, or mind, which the Sarvastivadins leaves as just one single dharma, into 89 dharmas, or 89 ultimate elements. That's the Theravada breakdown of citta, the second of these four great groups. The Sarvastivadins argue that mind is essentially one. The Sarvastivadins argue that there are many mental states, but they are all phenomena of consciousness itself. They are not independent. But the Theravadins do not agree with this. So the Theravadins reckon 89 dharmas, or ultimate elements, under the heading of citta, or mental states, or mind. Now, perhaps at this point we can begin to see why we speak of the analytical psychology of the Abhidharma. It's not obviously quite in the Jungian sense. The Abhidharma is an analytical psychology because it is, to begin with, an analytical philosophy. And its analysis of mind, we may say, is one aspect, one application of its analysis of the whole of existence, the whole of life. And for Buddhism, of course, this application, this aspect, that of analysis as applied to mind, is the most important of all. Why and how this is, we shall see in a minute.